The following programming is sponsored by Lou Scheinfeld. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Veterans Stadium, Philadelphia, Friday night, August 21st, the Bull Blast returns. Greg Luzinski and Dick Allen in a home run contest. The Dilly in Philly between games of the Phil's Dodgers Twinita. It's a
Every one of us is a walking museum of sports, from that first ball game with your parents to maybe getting that nervous, sweaty autograph to maybe even taking your own kids to their very first game. It's the feeling we all get that brings us back to our own personal Philly Field of Dreams. And the Museum of Sports show is on the air and ready to go there with you. I'm Doug Scheimel. Our show dedicated to sports memories, memorabilia, and the museum that is going to capture it all right here at the Philadelphia Sports Complex. We're live on the Talk 860 and Museum of Sports Facebook pages, so check us out. Museum of Sports show brought to you every week by the DePachi Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. Joining me from his sports palace, not in Clearwater, Florida, but in Villanova, Pennsylvania, he is our guide and mentor, Comcast Spectacor legend, founding vice president of the Philadelphia Flyers, and creator of the Museum of Sports, and author of the recent book, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, How Flash and Cash Rescued the Flyers and Created Philadelphia's Greatest Showplace. Ladies and gentlemen, Philadelphia's greatest showman, Lou Scheinfeld.
Hi, Lou. Hi there. I'm feeling a little better today. Last night, Villanova played DePaul. Yep. DePaul is one of the worst teams in the country, not just the Big East. They lost all 18 games in the Big East. They never led another team at halftime. I think they were 3-22, something like that, for the season. And don't they lead Villanova by 8 points in the second half? And then they're up by 2 points with 30, 40 seconds to go. And they're outplaying Villanova. They are hustling. They're shooting. They're running. They had fresh legs. I don't know what. And Villanova plays Villanova. They don't, nothing gets them upset. Nothing makes them happy. They just keep moving on and moving. Yeah. And they pulled it out at the very end with seconds left. A three pointer with, I think, 2 seconds left in the game, and they won by the skin of their teeth. Now, of course, they play, I think, Creighton or Marquette. Doesn't make any difference which one. They're both powerhouses tomorrow night, tonight, actually, at 9:30. And so I was sweating bullets.
Yeah, and you'll probably be sweating bullets all the way through the end of this process. From South Jersey, her office, the Blue Room there, I guess, I believe that's what they call it in the South Jersey White House, Museum of Sports Director of Community Outreach, Susan Baxter. Hi, Susan.
Hi, I'm going to piggyback on the keeping on the college basketball and mention that watching the women's is just as exciting as the men's. I advise everyone to follow. You know, you got Iowa with Caitlin Clark and her supporting cast, but you also have a peaceful Dawn Staley at the South Carolina SEC champions. And that game was just crazy against LSU. And seeing the coaching difference between somebody who's not as, I mean, Kim Mulkey is Kim Mulkey, but then Dawn Staley is like cool. So there's a huge coaching difference. Watching it adds to the game. So it's going to be an exciting women's tournament. And they are also selecting their 64 the same day, this Sunday at night. Same as the men. So it's going to be interesting, the matchups and the brackets, that's for sure.
I agree. Women's as exciting, if not more so. Well, coming up today with just 2 weeks till the Phillies home opener, the Wheels himself, Chris Wheeler, is going to be here joining us from the Grapefruit League Stadium down there in Clearwater, where he was, I think, doing PA today. We're also going to have what's hot, what's not, what's affordable in sports memorabilia with our own King of Sports Collectibles, Nick DePaccia Jr. But up first, this is something, of course, as the weather warms up to 75 here in Philly, even though we're not technically out of winter. Here's a little winter throwback, a little flashback. Back to, what was it, 1993, Lou? It was the first time an NHL game had been in any way affected by weather. When what happened down there at the illustrious Spectrum, Lou? You were a reporter live on the scene. What the hell happened, Lou?
You're right. It was 31 years ago today. March 14th, 1933, right. We're in the 20s now.
Lou was there.
1993. And I was at the game. And there was 2 minutes left in the first period. We were playing the LA Kings. And they don't come east very often. Well, but they come maybe twice a year. They don't come to Philly twice a year. They think going to Minnesota is, you know, it's east, going east. And with 2 minutes left in the game, there was a, first of all, there were only 2,000 people in a sold-out arena, because by the time the game started, there were 11 inches of snow on the ground and more expected. I think they wound up with like 18 or 19 or 20 inches of snow before it was all. So a lot of people stayed home, but they're watching on TV. And the wind, you know, the wind is, it's always windy in South Philadelphia, you know. The stadium area has wind. I mean, we should just put up wind power things and light up the city. And the wind came whipping. It was actually like a squall, a hurricane all in one. Yeah. And it blew out one of the windows of the Spectrum. Now, I'm going to try and share this if I can. While I'm talking here, it blew out the window and it blew it in, and glass went flying across the concourse. A lady working in a concession stand got cut. She covered her face with her hands, and her hands got cut.
Oh my God!
The glass went down the steps, hit the backboards, hit the dasherboards behind the dasherboards where the Kings. Right. Where, and people start running, and the players didn't know what was going on at first. It was such a loud boom, and so they finally they finished the period with 2 minutes left. They finished the period. The security had cordoned off the area where the glass came down, and they decided, you know, enough is enough. So let's not chance it, because a couple of years before that, 6 years, 7 years before, the roof blew off.
The roof in 1968.
So there have been incidences, you might say, of wind down there. But fortunately, nobody got badly hurt, and the game was not continued. It was rescheduled. I'm not sure what happened.
Yeah, they played it in its entirety like a day or two or three later, didn't they?
They played it in its entirety. I'm not sure who won. It was... But the Spectrum windows were huge. They were like 40, 50 feet high and 40, 50 feet wide all around the building. And here is a picture of the Spectrum windows, if you could see it. Now, you can see how big they are. Now, that used to be one piece of glass in each of those. And you could see they then put them in frames, 8 framed windows instead of one giant one. And back then, it cost about $6,000 per window. So when they broke, it was a $6,000 installation. But nobody got hurt, like I said. But it was the first time a hockey game had ever been postponed because of weather, because teams are mandated to get there the day before.
Yeah.
So there's no excuse for traveling, and you get a forfeit if you're not there. But it was also the first time a game was ever postponed after it began by weather. So by the time it was over, by the time the people left, there were like 15, 16 inches on the ground, and it wasn't easy to make it home.
Yeah. And that was considered the storm of the century in 1993, unlike the storm of the century forecast a few years later by John Belaris that did not happen.
Which was a storm of the minute.
Hey, Susan, said you kind of liked the Saquon Barkley acquisition for the Eagles.
It's like probably a lot of people for him staying within the division. I don't know your thoughts on it, but watching the some of the Twitter, I guess, responses. Tiki Barber's not happy. They were.
I saw that back.
Like arguing back and forth, and just the But I mean, he's an Eagle. He showed up at NovaCare Center today. I did see that footage, and it's going to be Howie's the man. Howie is like he's got to be one of the top GMs in the league. The way he's working it.
He's like a mad genius. He stays up at night and makes texts and phone calls. And I'll take that player.
Yep. Well, and I think, you know, Barkley probably looked, he said, where can I go where I'm going to be a useful part of an offense that still has a running back as a factor in it? And, you know, you saw what they did with DeAndre Swift here and what's been done in recent years. And I think with some of the coaching changes, you know, he'll be very useful in an offensive scheme here, I would bet.
And it keeps him close to his home in Pennsylvania, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Penn State boy.
Yeah. Hey, we want to make sure our viewers and listeners go to themuseumofsports.org to make a tax-deductible donation today so you can be part of Philly's sports shrine. And don't forget to buy Lou's new book. Do you have that handy, Lou? Blades, Bands, and Ballers, How Flash and Cash Rescued the Flyers and Created Philadelphia's Greatest Showplace. Lou, this is where you're supposed to do the visual product placement plug. Just go to themuseumofsports.org and Lou will pen you a personal greeting on there. When we come back, the Wheels himself, Philly's broadcast icon, Chris Wheeler from one of the Grapefruit League stadiums, when the Museum of Sports show continues right here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
67, and Philadelphia was in a rut. The economy, riots, Vietnam. That is, until the Broad Street Bullies rallied the region's spirits and brought more than 2 million into the streets to celebrate. You can read all about it in Lou Scheinfeld's candid memoir, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. You'll love the inside stories about Frank Sinatra, Ed Snyder, Bernie Parent, Frank Rizzo, Elvis Presley, the 76ers, Mick Jagger, Electric Factory Concerts, and Kate Smith. And you'll find out how Lou Scheinfeld helped Ed Snyder rescue the Flyers and, against all odds, got the Spectrum built. Blades, Bands, and Ballers. Get a signed first edition copy at themuseumofsports.org. Themuseumofsports.org. The book the Philadelphia Inquirer called a fascinating and hilarious read. Blades, Bands, and Ballers. An ode to a building that truly rocked.
The Museum of Sports Show is presented by Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonomic Center. Dr. Nicholas Depatche is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat heart disease, hypertension, palpitations, and more with minimum medicines. To learn more, please call Dr. Nicholas Depatche, MD, FACC, author of 4 books and over 100 articles and abstracts at 856-589-6034. That's 856-589-6034.
Did you miss a recent Museum of Sports show? No worries. You can see or listen to any of our previous shows on the Museum of Sports website or on our Facebook page. You'll love our lineup of great guests, including Merrill Reese, the Eagles' Vi Sekahema, Bill Berge and Kevin Riley, Flyers broadcasters Jim Jackson and Steve Coates, and the Phillies' always colorful Larry Boa. The Museum of Sports is on the air and Facebook, and you can join the fun every Thursday, 4 to 5 p.m. on WWDB 860 and Facebook Live.
ABC's Monday Night Baseball, live from Veterans Stadium in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Tonight, the New York Mets take on the Eastern Division leaders of the National League, the Philadelphia Phillies.
Hey, we're back on the Museum of Sports show here on Talk 860 and the Museum of Sports Facebook page, brought to you live by the Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. I'm Doug Scheimel, along with Lou Scheinfeld and Susan Baxter. Our guest today, and I love this intro, so I just copy and paste it from every appearance. He's as I always say, a Marple Newtown and a Penn State boy who done good in sportscasting. He made broadcasting stops in Chicago and with CBS Radio in New York. And he was the other legend in the booth for the Phillies alongside Harry Callis for nearly 4 decades. From Clearwater, Florida, fresh off a Phillies Grapefruit League win, a big Museum of Sports show. Welcome back to the one and only Wheels, Chris Wheeler. Chris, how are you, man?
Good. Thank you, Doug. Thank you, Lou. Thank you, Susan. It's great to be with you again. And from this beautiful ballpark in this beautiful little city of Clearwater, Florida.
So what were you doing there? You were doing PA or stadium?
Oh, yeah. I still do the public address. I started doing it in 1972, my first spring training. And other than, I think we had about 3 years when I was still on television where we televised every game in spring training. So I didn't do it those years. But other than that, I've been doing it every year since. So it's fun. Keeps me involved. You got to really pay attention and concentrate to all the changes and all. So it's good. I enjoy it.
You kind of jones for the good old TV days?
You know what? I I'm really over it. The first 2 years, I'll never forget the first year. Believe it or not, it's been 2013 since I was on the air. The first year I was down there, 2014, when they left without me and were flying to Texas to open the season. I thought, how can they play the season without me? I mean, I can't believe they could do this. And the next year, too, a little bit. But now I'm out there smelling the fumes from the buses when they leave. You know, it's like, go, get out of here. And I stay until July, so I'm happy with it.
All the non-glamour of television, right, Wheels?
Hey, I had a great look. I had 37 years where I didn't miss a road trip. I had so many years with the Phillies on the air and doing what I love. But did I miss it? Yeah. Do I miss it now? No. Am I still a fan? You bet. I love that. I still love the game. I still watch them. I went to the postseason last year and the year before because I was home. So it's good. Good life right now.
So before we drill down into all the nuts and bolts, you got to do a little pan left there to show us your view there without pulling out any cables or anything.
All right. This is BayCare Ballpark right here.
Oh, that's nice.
This is where we play our games. You see all around here the famous tiki bars out there where all these people are right now. And around here. And that's US 19 out there in the background. And enough to play our games. And when the fans come down here, they say, oh, wow, it's just as beautiful as we thought it was.
So it's 75 here. What is it there? Wheels?
What's that?
It's 80 there and it's 75 here.
I'm looking at the scoreboard clock. You know, let's see right now. Of course, as soon as I look at it, they only have the time up there. Oh, it's not that warm. They're saying it's 88 on there. It's probably in the low 80s. It's gorgeous. Humidity is a little bit low today, so it's beautiful.
And the Phillies did win today.
I was looking for the Hooters sign there when you painted it. Where is that?
Well,
he's got his.
All right.
Where are we? Can you see the scoreboard?
Oh, yeah.
See it out there? Right above Budweiser.
Oh, my.
So, yeah, that's a local establishment. They actually started here. Long time ago, six or seven guys, local guys, went into a biker bar that had been down there, never was anything, and they came up with that concept, and the rest is history.
Oh, my word. Yep. It seems like they've closed a lot of them around here, but they still keep like a couple of the regional strongholds. But
Darren Dalton's wife on the billboard once? And
number one.
He was in the stadium, and then behind them was our picture on the Hooters side.
That's funny you mentioned that, Lou, because that's true. Of course, he's a catcher, obviously. And out at old Jack Russell Stadium out there, they had this picture, an ad, and Lynn Austin, who was their spokesperson, and Lynn was really a neat person. She was the wife's number one. Well, they had gotten divorced, so he wasn't real happy looking out there at that point. You know, he was happy when they got him out of the games.
So they win today, Wheels. They beat the Red Sox 6-1. And I guess one of the concerns has been this sort of halting offense. Some offense with the starters, no offense with the starters. I mean, what did you see out there that maybe gave you a little bit of hope or reassurance?
Hey, you know what? I've done this for so long, Doug, that it means nothing to me when I'm down. I remember Johnny Crack going for the spring training 1 year, and his line was, well, you think I want to leave all those hits down here? So I don't see anything that's concerning with anybody. You know, Schwarber hit two balls really hard today, and he finally got a double. He's hit a bunch of balls hard the last couple of days. He still strikes out like he does. They all have their moments. The pitching has been okay. You know, it's been decent. The bullpen guys that you're counting on have all been pretty good. I'll tell you a guy that really is. Alec Bohm made some unbelievable plays again today. He is just it's remarkable to me how he has changed. From a guy who was really a liability down there that you ever wondered if he could ever play big league third baseman, you know, to that infamous moment when the camera was in his face when he said, I hate this bleeping place. A lot of players in Philadelphia said, I hate this bleeping place, but they didn't have a camera right in their face.
Yeah.
So, you know, he had to face all that, and he did such a great job of handling that with the media and all the things that he had to do. So, but boy, he's really becoming I don't want to get overboard on it, but he's becoming an above average third baseman right now. Now, whether it stays that way, I can't tell you. But these fields, although this is a really great field here, but some of these fields down there are not, they're not quite as good as you play on when you get in the major league parks, and he's been good.
And just the feel and just that temperature too. You get back up here, it still can be a little cold. It still can be, a little sort of like late wintery, early springy. It's not that spring training thing. And Aaron Nola, did he start today? Did he play?
Yeah, he played 2 days ago. He pitched 2 days ago and he was fine. Zach Wheeler's been good. He got a little bit of a late start because he was working on that contract. And then they had a baby. He and his wife had a baby. Yep. So they were working on that. The guys are closing up. They're closing up their room so the people that really work hard here can go home. They're closing the window. I saw Zach Wheeler today. I never really met him. He was outside our clubhouse today, and I walked by him and I walked up and I said, "Hi, I'm the other Wheels." And he said, "I've heard a lot." He said, "I've heard a lot about you." And I said, "Well, I've been around here. I'm really happy to have you around here, and then you signed that extension. Really nice man. Very nice man. Just the way he appears."
How's Trey Turner?
He's okay. And he had some really good at bats early on. I think the last 2 days I've seen him, he's been jumpy a little bit. He's been jumping at stuff. So that's what he had the problem with last year. It took him a long time to get settled down, but he's been fine. I can't look at any of them and think, Stott's been okay. None of them have, you look at right now and say, wow, that's really, but as I said, they hate to leave the hits down here anyway. All they're looking for right now is to hit it hard when they come up, and they only get 2-3 at bats a game. They're going on a road trip, to the East Coast to play a couple teams over there, the Marlins and the Astros. And I think they're taking some of the regulars with them to play over there a little bit. So they'll get some ABs. And then we come back here on Sunday for the unbelievable scene here on St. Louis. Wow. Phillies have had that forever. The league is nice enough to give us a home game all the time. And Tug used to always say, McGraw used to always say, "You can pitch me on St. Patrick's Day, but not the next day." and he meant it.
How are you feeling 2 weeks out, though, Wheels? I mean, Aaron Nola's kind of had fits and starts. I would assume he would be starting on opening day, which would make it his seventh straight opening day start. And I think only Steve Carlton or Robert Roberts have done that with the Phillies in distant years.
Yeah, he says Zach Wheeler should be the opening day starter. That's what Aaron said. That's typical Aaron Nola, because he's just a nice human being. He has no ego. Those two guys, I don't know them, but I know enough people that know them, and I know Aaron a little bit because he's the only guy left from when I was still around. They are two of the nicest people you ever want to meet, and yet they are fierce competitors when they're out there. So, look, this is a good team. What it has to do is try to get off to a little better start than it has the last couple of years and not get blown out by Atlanta early on. Open the season with the Atlanta Braves 3 games, so that'll be a pretty good test right away. It's a good team. Fans love them. We're selling out almost every game down here, and you know how the reaction to this team in Philadelphia, what it's been like. You have to be optimistic that they're going to be a good team and have a good year.
Not to put you on the spot, but 95 wins, you think?
A lot of wins, Luke. anytime you get around 90 in the low 90s, the mid 90s, that's a lot of wins. So I don't know. It's really harder nowadays to do that, I think. And now it's really interesting because now that you play everybody, you get in a series with teams you haven't seen, and you might catch 3 pitchers. You have no idea what they're going to do with you, except watching the video and all the other, they have a lot more stuff. Now. Used to be, you'd play teams a lot more, so the hitters would have a better idea about pitchers. But if this team wins 95 games, they'll be in postseason, obviously. What they'd like to do is win the division and not have to go through that horrendous trek they've had to go through the last few years and play those wild card games and those kind of things, because that's a tough way to get going. But it'd be nice to have a bye and be able to sit back and wait a little bit.
And what about the starting lineup? Is kind of a Schwarber, Turner, Harper, Realmuto, Stott, Bohm, Castellanos, Marsh, Rojas, at least 2 weeks out. Is that the way it's going to stay?
Yeah, knock on wood, because, you know, this time last year we had the serious injury of Rhys Hoskins about a week from today, I think it was. So, you know, we're all set. They were all set on what they were going to do last year. And then all of a sudden this poor guy goes down with a blown. I'm looking out there right now where they're hosing down the field, and I can still see him go for that ball. It was right in my line of sight here down the first baseline and making an awkward twist and then falling and holding his knee. And I thought he just blew an ACL. Because I've seen enough non-contact injuries in sports in my life, and but you got to be kidding me, you know, that that happens right now. I think that's the starting, what you just mentioned, Doug. They got, obviously, they got Marsh back yesterday or 2 days ago.
Yeah.
He pinch ran for Schwarber today and then stayed in DH. He's right. He ran the bases and scored after Schwarber's double, running very, very well. He's a heck of a left fielder. You know, that's. He gives you a lot of defense out there. And I don't know about whether Rojas will be the center fielder, but right now they want him to be. He's made two remarkable plays down here this spring. He reminds me of Andrew Jones, and you guys and Susan all remember him. When I was a broadcaster, when you do a Braves game, the ball would be hit, and you'd look up, and Andrew Jones had already been running three or four steps. Yeah. And that's what this guy's like. You can't teach what he does. He has unbelievable instinct. Can he hit enough to stay up here and bat ninth in the big league lineup on a contender? We'll see.
Yeah, he needs more instinct with his bat, that Rojas.
Well, everybody has their hardest things to do, and I don't think there's anything harder in sports than to hit a baseball, especially nowadays, as hard as these guys throw and the way they move it around. And, you know, the starters don't stay out there as long as they used to. Then you're facing two, three, four relievers who strike people out. It's really hard to hit nowadays. And he's working really hard with Kevin Long and people that are working with him. He's a great kid. Everybody loves him. Mm-hmm. Whether that's going to be enough, we'll see.
To hit. I know when we've had you on in the last couple of years and a lot of the new rules were implemented, pitch clock and some of the other things, we've had kind of a cumulative effect now over the course of a season and a half. What do you think the effects are, and do you foresee some more rule changes coming, or would you like to see?
The cumulative thing, the number one thing that some people really enjoy is the time of game.
Yes.
They're shorter.
Yes.
They're even shorter down here. I think we only played 2:11 the other day. I think we played, I don't have my stuff in front of me right now, I think we played 2:16 or 2:20 down here today. Of course, the wind wasn't blowing. When the wind blows out, the games are longer. You can't help it down here because the fly balls are home runs and singles or doubles and all that. But yeah, I think so. Look, some of the pitchers didn't like it. Our two guys, Zach Wheeler and Aaron Nola, they struggled with that timer early in the season because they were used to. Aaron Nolan led the league in throwovers. He wasn't trying to pick somebody off, but that's just the way he controlled the game when he wanted to step off. You notice last year, for the first 4 months of the season, maybe 4.5 months, he couldn't stay out of a big inning. By a big inning, I mean 3-4 runs, multiple runs. And the reason was because he couldn't control the game the way he had before. And he'd get into a thing, and all of a sudden he couldn't get out of it. And he got better as the year went on. So did Zach. So I think for the fans are enjoying it. As far as the bases go, I didn't notice any big deal.
Yeah.
I can steal after two. There are more stolen bases now. There are more guys running. There's no doubt about it. So I don't think you can find, in my opinion, I don't see any negatives in what they've done and what they're trying to do. It's still a great game. The bases are still 90 feet, and they've been that way forever.
Yeah.
So somebody did something right a long time ago.
Anything else that needs to be implemented?
Well, I was really a proponent of getting rid of those shifts, and I'm really happy, and I hope they never go back to talking about those shifts again. I know people say, well, you know, they overshoot. Oh, you just hit the ball. No, it's not that easy. You know, you just don't hit the ball the other way. Plus, a lot of people that they overshifted, they wanted them to do that stuff because you get them on base, and then it takes two hits to score them because they can't run. So that's why they're overshifting on them. So, you know, I'm kind of happy with what they've done right now. You know, people have some other suggestions, and it goes through the Players Association and MLB. And, you know, I think we've gotten to the point now in our sport where they're not so resistant to making changes on both sides. So we'll see. We'll see what if you tell me what the change is that you want to make or something, I may have an opinion on it. But I think they've done a good job with it.
You don't want the robo umpires?
Not a fan of what?
I just said I'm not a fan of putting the runner on second base.
Second base.
And you know, I'm not a fan of that.
That's interesting. Well, see, fans like that because it gets a game over with. Now, you notice they don't do it in postseason play, and they're not going to do it. I laugh about it now, Susan, because, you know, I did 17, 18, 19, 20 inning games, you know, and you're going on the road the next day or something. Then you're at a day game the next day. So I can understand right now why, as a broadcaster, they don't miss it. They don't miss those long games and all that. I get it. I have mixed emotions about that, but in a way, it helps keep your pitching staff a little healthier, a little stronger, because you don't get in the, and I hate it when they put a position player in a game, and we even do it now. Mm-hmm. Jim Fregosi, who you all remember, he never, ever, ever would put a position player in a game, and I wonder what he think about it right now when they do it so much.
Hey, we got to hit a break now. Yeah. When we come back with the legendary Wheels, Chris Wheeler, so we will talk such important things as doing away with Dollar Dog Night, sports collectibles, and near calamities of opening, the first pitch stunts when we come back here on the Museum Sports Show, which continues on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. We'll be back in a moment.
Can you imagine Philadelphia without the Broad Street Bullies or its fabled Spectrum Arena? Well, it almost happened until Lou Scheinfeld and Ed Snyder, otherwise known as Flash and Cash, teamed up to rescue the Flyers and got America's Showplace up and running. It was 1967, and the world was in a whole different place. You can read all about it in Lou Scheinfeld's heartfelt memoir, Blades, Bands, and Ballers. Get a signed copy at themuseumofsports.org. Themuseumofsports.org. Blades, Bands, and Ballers, now available.
The Museum of Sports Show is presented by Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonomic Center. Dr. Nicholas Depatche is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat shortness of breath, brain fog, chronic disease, autonomic dysfunction syndrome, and more with minimum medicines. To learn more, please call Nicholas Depatche, MD, FACC, at 856-589-6034. That's 856-589-6034.
Who remembers the Philadelphia A's or the Warriors or the old arena at 46th and Market? We do, and that's why the Museum of Sports is being planned for Philadelphia. What's it like to face a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, ride your bike up the Maniunk Wall, or drive in the Pocono 500? We've got rare items from Babe Ruth, Mike Schmidt, Chuck Bednar, Bernie Perron, and Wilt Chamberlain. The Museum of Sports is on the air, and you can join the fun every Thursday, 4 to 5 p.m. on WWDB 860.
Back on the Museum of Sports Show here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live, sponsored every week by the Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. We are talking with the Phillies broadcasting legend and the Wheels himself, or the other Wheels, as he likes to call himself, Chris Wheeler. Wheels, I guess first thing I about was Chris McGarry. Griff McGarry. Yeah, we were talking about him in the break, who's going to be the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs. You like him, but he's still a little.
Well, he's nasty. Huge arm. He had a game out here early in the spring where he struck out three hitters, I think, on 11 or 12 pitches. And the last two times out, he struggled with his command again. So he was a starting pitcher. They've really made his delivery a little more compact. He's one of those guys, his ball moves all over the place. And some of those guys just have command problems. Hitters see that thing moving all over, and they don't want to swing at it, so they'll take it. Now, if you have two strikes on a guy, they'll chase. They'll start swinging at it. So from what I understand is they're going to they've already cut him, and he's back over here. Our complex is off here to my left. They've already put him back over there and are trying to get him as much work as possible as a reliever to go to Lehigh Valley, start the season, and hopefully have another guy that you can put in your bullpen who strikes people out.
Yeah. Another situational guy. Lou, I know.
Yeah, I was going to ask you a couple of things. One is I know they took another couple seconds off the clock for the pitcher, so they got with a man on base. And the other thing was Rojas, they were going to encourage him to bunt more. So how are those things working out?
Well, I haven't seen him bunt the games that much. They say he's working on it in, over the complex. But, look, he tried to bunt a lot last year, and he couldn't bunt. Everybody says, why don't you bunt? Well, it's hard. The reason is it's hard. It's hard to keep it fair. It's hard to keep it fair in an area where somebody doesn't field it and throw you out, although he can really run. If he could ever get in that little area that good bunters can do. Well, so,
Chris, they have to build up that foul line between home and third like they did for Richie Ashburn.
Hey, that, you say that. The old days, they used to doctor the fields, you know, like the Pirates, the old Pittsburgh Pirates in the early 60s had all those ground ball hitters that used to chop it down, like Clemente and Alou and all that, Billy Verdon. It was hard as a rock, they said, out in front of home plate so they could beat down on it. Other teams would water down the baselines and off. A team could really run. So, you can't get away with that stuff anymore, Lou.
sports.
Yeah. Well, hey, look, they try to, you know, the pitchers try to do some stuff with a little stick 'em and all. And they were spinning the ball at such a rate that hitters really were struggling because the ball was really moving because they could hold on to it a lot longer before it would spin out of their hand. So now, you know, they check them between innings and make sure there's nothing in their hand and their glove. Right. They'll find a way to do it, though.
Well, for all
Richie
the reasons,
Ashburn used to always say, pitchers, they all cheat.
Right, yeah.
You were saying, Wheels, for all the reasons it's tough to hit a ball, those same reasons to bunt a ball, you know.
Oh, yeah. You always get a kick out of fans say, you know, like pitchers don't have to hit anymore, thank God, because, you know, it got so bad, especially with them trying to hit or try to bunt. But why don't they get the bunt down? Well, you think that pitcher wants them to get the bunt down? I mean, he's doing everything he can to put in the areas or to strike a little fear in them, you know, to buzz the tower a little bit early on so that they can't, you know, they're not comfortable getting the bunt down. Some guys are more comfortable about it than others, and I know they wanted to work on it and all, but it's become a lost art in our game, and it's not coming back.
Yeah. Speaking of a lost art in the game, it was banished going into the season. The integral part of every season, a dollar dog night. And
well, you know, I never had much experience with that because you know, I was upstairs. Although they would, you know, the Fanatic or the Hatfield Pig would bring up his name. Anyway, it doesn't matter. They would bring up it with a Fanatic. They would bring up dogs for us, you know, and we would throw them out of the booth and stuff like that. So
that's where it started.
Yeah. but people were looking up at us and begging, you know, like, arf, 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 like steals, you know. And it was kind of fun. But I understand our marketing people evidently were having some problems. Nowadays, people have a tendency to get overserved in some areas and also to do some other things that maybe you don't want them to do. And is it fun? Yeah, it's fun for them, but it's not fun a lot of times for people around and with kids and all that and families. So I think they just decided that they were going to take that debauchery out of the game.
Well, exactly.
At least our part.
Like they always say, you know, if you're not careful, you'll dollar dog your eye out. So
that's another thing. You know, there's tinfoil on those things. But I mean, people that were, you know, but calling Ralph out there in the stands after they had too many dollar dogs.
And yeah. All
you know what I mean? That's not good.
Yeah. If you have to clean it up, you know, we know what you
they
mean.
They don't. We're poor person working have to clean it up and people around them are. So that's what I heard that probably was one of the main reasons that it was getting a little bit out of control. So they're going to modify it another way and not let people be able to buy so many of them.
Yeah. Two for one.
For a dollar.
They're delicious, though. They're very good.
Oh, they are.
So, hey, Wheels, I know we've asked you in the past, and any new items in the the personal sports memorabilia collection? And yours is kind of an off-the-wall one.
Yeah. You made me look, Doug, you know, after the last time you mentioned it, because I never was a collector. And I look back on it now, maybe I should have gotten some bats. And I have no bats signed. I do have some baseballs, but you know, I do have a Hank Aaron baseball that's faded, so nobody can tell it's Hank Aaron unless I tell them.
Yeah.
One of my favorite ones is the one signed by the great Walenda. Bill Giles was always having him deliver or do that walk across. Oh, that was scary watching him walk. And the poor man finally lost it and Puerto Rico and was killed.
Oh, yeah.
But I have that baseball of his. I have a wonderful photo that I kind of showed you last time that I hadn't even forgotten about that I have in my office at home. Or down here in Clearwater, that is a picture of me in between Tim McCarver and Brent Musburger. And now that we lost Tim, he was my best friend ever. You know, it means even more to me. And I always wish I'd have gotten it signed. And Brent was the first umpire that Timmy ever had behind home plate in a minor league game, when Brent was a minor league umpire before he became a big time writer and then broadcaster. Really? And I have other balls signed by Lefty and Steve Carlton. I have the great photo of, Pete over by the dugout that the Daily News had of him, the ball popping out of his glove and Booney catching it, and you see Tug in the background. So I have some pretty cool stuff that I have at home, but you know, I've never been something that I did that I just have stuff by accident, I think.
Sounds like you have some treasure to me.
Well, Susan, you know, of Timmy with breast, you know, that, now that we lost him, that means a lot to me, that photo, because he was, he was the John Madden of our sport as far as a broadcaster went. He changed the role of the analyst in baseball the way that John Madden changed the role of the analyst in football. Yep. And, you know, I never really had a closer friend, and, you know, and I miss him.
And Walenda signed ball, and you guys, you and Lou were talking pre-show, I think, or one of the things about that was just one of the many near disastrous opening pitch sort of things. Lou, you brought up one earlier, and I didn't remember.
Kite Man, the famous Kite Man.
You know, we used to sit in those meetings before I was a broadcaster. I worked with a wonderful guy named Larry Schenk, who you all know, and thankfully he's still with us and does some writing and all. But Larry was a director of publicity, public relations, hired me as his assistant in 1971 when I was 24 years old. And he and I were baseball guys. You know, we really weren't into the shticks. But Bill was a P.T. Barnum of his time. And he loved having opening day. We always wanted to say, what are you trying to do? Get somebody killed in front of everybody on opening day?
That's exactly
it. Really. I mean, it was just awful. But, you know, we got away with it all those years. Yeah, but he had a Kite Man act set up. He'd gotten it from somewhere to deliver the first ball to come down a ramp in center field. And then we had a strike at the beginning of the year where the Kite Man that he had couldn't make it. So now he's got to go find a backup Kite Man.
And they're so everywhere.
So he found some guy in down in Winter Haven, Florida or something that did it, brought him up. The wind's blowing 100 mile an hour that night, and everybody knows what happened. The guy didn't want to go. He didn't want to go. And I remember them. Bill was into the walkie talkie. Come on, let's go. We got 60,000 people. And sure enough, he goes down that ramp, and it blows him right off. And he goes right into the stands. And I was telling you guys earlier, I'll never forget the shot we had in the NFL Films, I think, was doing. I don't remember who was doing it, but they took a shot of Frank Rizzo, and he looked like he had just swallowed a bad clam. I mean, the look on the Bambino's face was, oh, man, did we just kill somebody in what he used to call my stadium? So to that guy's credit, he jumped up and ran to the railing and threw the first ball out and landed out in center field, and I think Gary Maddox ran and got it.
now that is a quintessential showman right there. Hey, the iconic Wheels, Chris Wheeler, we love you. Thank you so much for doing this. You go live from just about anywhere that you are.
And, well, thank you, Doug. I'm glad I enjoy you guys. You know, of course, Lou has been a friend for a long time. Susan, I appreciate you being on the show. Look, when I can do it, I'll do it. You know, that's what it comes down to. So we've been able to make it work, especially today after the game. It worked out perfectly. I kind of makes me go back to my memories of doing post game shows after games, of sitting here in an empty stadium, you know, looking around and watching what it looked like when it was just sold out, you know, a couple hours ago. So it's kind of cool.
Listen, you back anytime when you got a project book. When you're doing a one-man Broadway show, let us know.
Many times. Hey, I just saw the Four Tops and the Temps the other night. It was great.
Oh, so nice.
One of the guys with the Temps is 82 years old. He's an original. Unbelievably. Yeah. And, you know, they can dance a little bit. So it was fun to watch.
Well, Chris Wheeler, my friend, enjoy.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
When we come back here in the on the Museum of Sports Show, our King of Sports collectibles, when the Museum of Sports Show continues right here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live, back in just a moment.
Can you imagine Philadelphia without the Broad Street Bullies or its fabled Spectrum Arena? Well, it almost happened until Lou Scheinfeld and Ed Snyder, otherwise known as Flash and Cash, teamed up to rescue the Flyers and got America's Showplace up and running. It was 1967, and the world was in a whole different place. You can read all about it in Lou Scheinfeld's heartfelt memoir, Blades, Bands, and Ballers. Get a signed copy at themuseumofsports.org. Themuseumofsports.org. Blades, Bands, and Ballers, now available.
The Museum of Sports Show is presented by Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonomic Center. Dr. Nicholas Depatche is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat shortness of breath, brain fog, chronic disease, autonomic dysfunction syndrome, and more with minimum medicines. To learn more, please call Nicholas Depatche, MD, FACC, at 856-589-6034. That's 856-589-6034.
Hey, buddy, what can I get you? How about the ultimate sports memorabilia basement?
We're back on the Museum of Sports Show here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. I'm Doug Scheimel, along with Lou Scheinfeld and Susan Baxter. Museum of Sports Show brought to you by the Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular Center with a really great logoed shirt. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. And speaking of a specialist in non-invasive treatment, fresh off a week off and a haircut, he is our king of sports collectibles, whose family has the world's largest and most valuable sports memorabilia collection, valued well in excess of trillions and trillions of dollars. And he is our proud partner in the Museum of Sports. Ladies and gentlemen, back on the show this week, Nick Depatche Jr. Hi, Nick.
Hey guys, good to be back on Scrubs with our logo.
I would love Scrubs.
With your names on it, obviously. I got Nicholas D here. So
yeah, we'll have that would be
Doug
wonderful.
S, God. Susan B or T?
B would work.
Oh, Louis S.
King.
Okay, King.
Oh. King.
King Louis. Like from the Jungle Book.
And I'll right. just go with, and I'll just go with Schmuck. That's fine. Hey, we just had Wheels, Chris Wheeler on. He's got a few things here and there, sports memorabilia wise. But as he said, he just sort of collected stuff by accident, which is oftentimes the case with broadcasters. It was sort of frowned upon to do those sort of touristy fanny things, you know, when you're in the midst of your coverage or what have you. So the stuff he got was just from some of his admirers, you know, among the athletes. But the one he says that sort of stands out was a signed baseball, and Lou, help me out on this one. It was signed by the great Walenda. I don't remember his first name. Did Wheels say it?
Carl. I think it was Carl. He was Carl. In his 80s.
Yeah.
And, not too long after that, he fell to his demise.
But he was a tightrope walker. They would stretch these cables across these, you know, seemingly, you know, uncrossable things. And did it go from one side of that stadium to the other?
Center field to home plate. Center field to home plate.
And he made it across there. And somewhere along the lines, Wheels got the ball signed by him. And we were just kind of reciting, Lou and Wheels were reciting all the near calamitous opening pitch stunts that, you know, the teams had promoted over the years. What would there be any value to something like that?
There would be value. It wouldn't be as much as, let's say, any Hall of Famers or
Carl Hubble rather than Carl Walenda.
Carl Hubble instead of Carl Walenda. Carl Hubble would probably bring in I would say 10 times as much. He'd probably bring in 500, whereas Carl Walenda, I could see $50 or something between 50 and 100.
That's all, really?
If he wrote maybe he wrote an inscription saying something along
Thank
the lines
God
of
God I didn't fall.
He also had one of President Clinton.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. And Is what was the occasion for that, Lou? What was the story he had for that?
He had walked up to him and asked him.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Now, if that was at a that was probably at Vet Stadium, or was that at
that was an All-Star game. All-Star game.
Ah.
That's what it was. 96, was it?
I don't know which year, but
well, let's say for the sake of argument, yeah, let's say it was the 96 one. What would something like that be worth?
If it's a All-Star game logo on it, and it's signed by President Clinton, I could see that fetching close to $1,500.
Oh, really?
If it's a ball without the All-Star game logo, maybe just a little less, between $1,000 and $1,200. But it depends on obviously the grade of the signature.
Yeah.
If it's authenticated, it's got to be authenticated to. By
and a lot of times you say authenticated. Okay, so let's say you're just the average fan. You get this great autograph. You enclose it in one of those little snap close, you know, display cases. How does the average guy get something authenticated? I mean, do you go somewhere? Do you go to like Carl's Cards and Collectibles in Havertown? Do you go to the Depatchi Museum drive-through? How does that work?
Well, hopefully we'll have graders come to the museum once we're open, from PSA or JSA. Jimmy Spence right. is the one who he's the top of the top when it comes to grading signatures and authenticating signatures. And Jimmy Spence, I know from when I was a little kid, him and his, he used to bring his parents with him to those sports shows that right. they had in the casinos and in hotels where they had the athletes signing. And he started off selling these. They were really nice. It was framed pictures that he would take,
right.
like, let's say, the 27 Yankees or the 29 Athletics. He would take a World Series champion. He'd put the program in the middle. Mm-hmm. He'd get autographs from every player, and he'd mount them.
Oh, wow.
And it would be like a team picture in there, and it would be a really nice display. And he worked his way up to the top of the industry in terms of authenticating autographs. So, and he's a really nice guy. Jimmy Spence. Now it's JSA is his company.
Right.
So if you Google JSA, the information of how to send something there, you would have to package it the correct way and send it to them. And then they would grade it and send it back, just like grading cards.
And what does that cost if you just send an A baseball? Will they take just a thing, or do you have to send like a box load of stuff?
I think you could send one item. If it's anything like card grading, you could send one item. You would put the estimated value of the item, and if it is authentic, and that's what you would pay based on it. But it's not too expensive. The card grading isn't too expensive. Like, it could be anywhere from $25, but $1,000. I mean, it depends what you have. If you have a card that's worth $1 million, you're going to be paying more to get it authenticated. The average signature, it should not be too much to authenticate. You just have to find out where to go. And I'm sure his website has the information.
And what exactly, when you send it for authentication, if it's an autograph, are they just essentially doing like handwriting analysis?
I think they do. I think he looks at the handwriting, consistency of like that there's no breaks in the way the letters are.
Right.
So like a Mickey Mantle signature would be smooth, whereas if you're forging the signature, you might like do it a little bit at a time to try to get it exact. And I mean, that's, you could tell that under a microscope, or the professionals, they have, I mean, they have plenty of experience doing that. I'm on the JSA website right now. How do I share the screen?
That's a darn good question. I think green, at the bottom.
Icon at the bottom. It's a green. It says share screen.
Okay. So I'm going to share that.
There it is.
Yeah, so it's just Jim authentication, JSA, and it says four ways to authenticate. You could ship it to them. You could meet him at an event or an appearance, and there he is right here. Very nice guy, like I said. Schedule an office visit. So he has two locations in Florida and New Jersey. So for those in this area, that's pretty convenient.
That's actually
and schedule a house call.
Of course, there'd be a house call for something like
that. For that $1 million
the house call, though, you could see the minimum is $2,500. Yeah. So the house calls are he won't do that for the run of the mill items. It sounds like, but it's not hard to do it. And if the item's worth enough money that it's worth it to get it authenticated, you could see he does toys, those Funko Pops. I mean, he does any signatures.
Yeah, one of the things we're going to have to do is like an entire show devoted to how do you get this stuff done. Hey, guys, that's all the time we've got this week. We want to thank our guest and longtime Phillies TV analyst, Chris Wheeler. Of course, our king of sports collectibles, Nick DiPaccio Jr. Don't forget to buy Lou's new book, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, How Flash and Cash Rescued the Flyers and Created Philadelphia's Greatest Showplace. Go to themuseumofsports.org and Lou will pen you a personal greeting. Museum of Sports Show brought to you by DiPaccio Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. For Lou Scheinfeld, Susan Baxter, Nick DiPaccio Jr., I'm Doug Scheimel, reminding you of what our good friend Carly Simon always says, Louis.
These are the good old days.
They are indeed. Have a great night. Have a great weekend, everybody.